I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Samuel Casey Carter, the new chief executive of the New Faith in the Future Foundation, has a big job on his hands. The Archdiocese of Philadelphia turned over the management of 17 Catholic high schools and 4 special education schools to the private foundation this summer. The system has been losing students for about a decade now and is facing some serious financial challenges. Carter has had a long-standing interest in Catholic education and in charter schools. He was is the past president of the National Heritage Academies. That's the largest for-profit charter school management company in the country. He's written several books, including On Purpose, How Great School Cultures Form Strong Character, and No Excuses, Lessons from 21 High-Performing, High-Poverty Schools. He's also the co-author of a new report titled Data Backpacks, Portable Records, and Learner Profiles. And Casey Carter, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Help us understand the relationship between the foundation that you run and the Archdiocese of Philadelphia.
Yes. So Faith in the Future is a first-of-its-kind, independent foundation that is responsible for the strategic management and operational oversight, as you've just said, the 17 high schools and the 4 schools of special education, not just in the city of Philadelphia, but as we discussed just prior to this, the 5-county Philadelphia region. The relationship, to get to your question, is a contract between the Archdiocese and the foundation to provide these services. The foundation wants to have its independence so that it can raise money separately, so that it can provide these services with an external third-party expertise. But the Archdiocese continues to own the schools.
And how about curriculum, you know, all the things that are taught in the classroom? Is that the responsibility of the foundation, or is that the responsibility of the Archdiocese?
So the Archdiocese continues to have its Office of Catholic Education. The principals and the presidents, the internal and the external leaders of each of the schools, report up still through their own superintendent of secondary education, who then reports up through the secretariat, which then reports up to me. So we get to serve as the executive board of education for the schools, but the operation of the schools is still pursued at the Office of Catholic Education. So curricular decisions, we'll be able to guide those strategically. We'll be able to bring new insight into how it is that we can identify better what it is that a child knows and what a child needs to know next. But the day-to-day running of it, if that's clear, is still at that OCE level.
So if I'm one of the 16,000 students attending one of the area high schools, what would be different this year? Or is it too soon to institute new either procedures or policies?
Well, what's different, at least for the students at the 4 schools that were previously named to be closed, is that they're in school today.
They're open.
They're open, where they wouldn't be previously. The extraordinary news back in February, as you were following this story, was that the Blue Ribbon Commission had already done its analysis and said, because of the economic failure, which we should really get to, what is the current condition that's created the state that we're in today, because of the economic failure that was forcing these schools to close, that determination, through then an appeals process, was then turned over. And the 4 schools that are open today, are they different? Yes. They've got larger freshman classes than they've had in years before. We've already turned the tide on the enrollment. The work that was done by the foundation from February through September to attract students to our schools and to make it affordable, that's the real issue here, Marty, is we don't have a quality issue. We have an access and affordability issue. To answer your question more directly, what the schools are going to see is they're going to see an incredible focus in the first instance on let's keep the doors open and let's keep the business running. So we have to focus on enrollment management. We have to focus on marketing. In the next few days here, you're going to see an extraordinary campaign that is so beautiful, that celebrates the individual excellence of these schools and shows how they can be better together. It's that second part that really gets to the interesting part of your question. How can they be better together? How can the school system benefit from the individual instructional expertise in one school that can then be shared across all of them? How is it that we can raise money through just world-class development and grants management so that the alumni who are so enthusiastic in this city, who are so extraordinarily devoted both to the high schools that are open today, but the legacy schools that they came from, how can we re-engage them and let them know we're not only open for business, but we're here to demonstrate what's truly possible in the education of the young? That's going to show things that are so different than you've seen before.
There have been some pretty dramatic shifts, over, not just in the last decade, but I would say over the last generation or two. Population decline, for one thing. There's a lower birth rate among Catholics,
yes,
for another thing. Fewer baptisms. And frankly, more choices. There are charter schools in Philadelphia, and I know that the Catholic schools have lost students to the charter schools. Do you see them all as challenges?
So what you've just laid out there is a series of demographic, or more broadly, economic changes that have then resulted in the current state today. And let's talk about what's happening in the city of Philadelphia as a educational ecosystem. You're right that the year after I was born in 1966, so in 1967 we had the very tail end of the baby boom, right, and the largest number of children coming into the school system, public, private, and parochial. What you have then is over that period of time, sure, a decline in the number of kids, but today, let's just take the current state today, the day before election here in the city of Philadelphia, you have the 14,210 students in our high schools, as I mentioned earlier, roughly a little more than 200 in our schools of special education. And these children, we could double the number of children in our schools today. We have that kind of capacity. And so that's what we would call supply in economic terms. And today, there are thousands upon thousands of children who are in schools in the city of Philadelphia that would like to go to a better school than they can today. And that's called demand. And yet that demand and supply aren't matching up. And so Faith in the Future, primarily what we need to do is overcome the economic challenge of their children that want our choice but can't afford it.
Well, and it does cost money to go to a Catholic school. And this is a city with about 25% poverty rate. There's a pretty high poverty rate in the city as well. Of course, we're talking regionally, too. Mm.
And that 25% is probably actually higher when you factor in other determinations that are just making the overall cost of living more expensive today, although the number you cite, I think, is exactly right based on the poverty level. So the situation then is, how do we make it more affordable? How do we provide this choice that children want and that families want for their children more likely and easier to obtain? And one thing that we've got going for us here in the state of Pennsylvania that is truly definitional, and we hope that this will expand for more children across the country, is, of course, the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit. And so your governor is really to be commended, and the current legislature really to be commended for the passing of that. So what we at Faith in the Future really need to do in the first instance this year is get those corporations that have that tax liability today to designate to blocks and to other organizations that you know about, these scholarship organizations here in town, to designate those tax credits so that we can then match up those dollars with children and with families who want to take advantage of them.
Do you see, though, and we're talking about Catholic high schools and some special ed schools as well under the management responsibility of your foundation, but do you see yourself in competition with public schools and charter schools, even other private schools, or do you see yourself as part of this collaborative group trying to solve a very important problem, which is how do you educate all children?
The latter. And I absolutely see myself, Casey Carter, former charter school guy, now coming over to work with Faith in the Future to fundamentally change the way we do business in Catholic schools. So that's really the exciting thing we have going for us here in the city of Philadelphia. Is, to your earlier question, I went off down the road of the demographics.
Okay.
And thanks for bringing me back. And thanks for being here. Having gone down that road of the demographics, we see the stress and the strain. But what's happened is, to your question, we've been trying, all of us who love public schools, local public schools, and love public charter schools as an option for families that want something different than what you can just get at your local public school, is that, yes, families have chosen the no-cost charter school option over the option to go to the Catholic school. And that has resulted, right, in a net loss of quality seats. That's the problem that we at Faith in the Future are now trying to overcome, is that while the charter schools have expanded and grown, it hasn't, in many cases, resulted in a net growth positive change in quality seats. It's because for many of those charter school seats that have been filled, they've been filled by children who left Catholic schools. What we need to do now is we need to fill the Catholic schools with children who are coming from schools that are failing or not serving them well, as we continue to let the charter school sector grow. So this is a resounding yes to your question. We want to see charter schools grow. We want to see, yes, we see ourselves in competition with them. And what we offer is different.
Right.
And that's the point, is let's differentiate our offerings. Let people understand that at your local Catholic high school, you can get arts and sports and music of a kind and of a quality that is very different than what you can offer at a public charter school, and we want to be able to compete on that, but we also want to be able to compete on our faith formation and on our commitment to the education of the whole child.
But are you also dependent on vouchers, on the idea of money going to students for their family to decide on where they're going to go to school?
So are we dependent on vouchers? In the first instance, what we wanted, we would rephrase that and say, yes, we want to work actively with state, local, district, federal authorities to make sure that the money that is available to educate children, if we can educate them in our setting better than the local competition, then yes, we believe that some portion of that funding should flow to us. And I want to work very hard, not just to get the alumni in this city enthusiastic about their schools so that we can raise those development dollars and have philanthropy support these schools. That's one thing. I truly, deeply believe, and have as a person supporting school choice for 20-some years now, believe that we need to work very hard with the district to say, if we're educating children that you are not, then let us work with you to figure out how we can educate them so that we believe in the education of the public. We don't necessarily believe in the public education of every child in school.
Because I think we're almost up in a break here, but the difference is that public schools have to educate all children, no matter their circumstances, no matter their educational abilities, no matter whether they're on grade level or not.
Yes, and I would say that we do too. And that's not an overstatement. And what we really should take up maybe in the next section is how is it the good design to expect all schools to be all things to all men? And isn't, as a result, the consequence of that is that we don't do a very good job of educating all people? And couldn't we work together strategically to figure out, are there some of our schools, are St. Lucie's School for the Visually Impaired is one of the most beautiful programs you've ever seen for children with blindness. We educate those children at a fraction of the cost of children up the street in Overbrook. And wouldn't it be a wonderful opportunity for us to show people what we can do and to have more children with blindness be educated in our schools if we could fund that differently?
And that's Casey Carter. He's the new chief executive of the Faith in the Future Foundation and the Archdiocese essentially testing out a new business model, turning over the management of its 17 high schools, 4 special education schools to the foundation. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Lines open. Any questions or comments, call us at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Are you or is someone you know overweight? Drexel University is currently enrolling overweight participants in Mind Your Health, a research study evaluating methods of losing weight and keeping it off without medication. These programs are funded by the National Institutes of Health. More information online at drexel.edu/weightloss or 215-762-4900. That's 215-762-4900. Drexel supports WHYY.
I'm Dave Davies. Join me Monday at 1 for a WHYY original production, Beyond the Ballot. On the eve of the election, we'll consider Mitt Romney's chances of an upset in Pennsylvania and whether tales of Philadelphia voter fraud are real or imagined. We'll look at a spirited Senate race in Delaware, meet a member of the Electoral College, get a British perspective on the American political circus, and more. That's Beyond the Ballot, Monday afternoon at 1 on WHYY-FM.
Supporting WHYY, the Krefeld School, a small, progressive, independent college preparatory school for grades 7 through 12. Krefeld offers a learner-friendly curriculum, a visual and performing arts program which includes glassblowing, and an education which is hands-on and experiential. Krefeld strives to foster critically engaged citizens in a community of individuals. Located in Chestnut Hill, Krefeld is widely accessible via public transportation and school buses. Monthly open house dates and admission details at krefeld.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Casey Carter, the new chief executive of the New Faith in the Future Foundation. And as I said right before the break, the Archdiocese of Philadelphia has essentially turned over the management of the 17 area Catholic high schools and 4 special education schools to this private foundation. And our guest has been taking a listening tour, talking and meeting with some members of some of these schools to find out what's going on and perhaps what they want as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So when you've gone on some of these listening tours, who have you been listening to?
So it was announced that I had accepted this job on October the 8th, and within a half hour of that announcement, it was really gratifying to have on the telephone all of the presidents or the external leads of the schools and the principals of these 17 high schools and our 4 schools of special education. So they're the first audience for me to listen to. This is the leadership of these schools so that I can understand on the ground what are the challenges that they're facing and what are the opportunities that they see for us to really celebrate the high quality of education that we have and to work differently with each other so that we can share our resources across the system. I'm now going between then, October 8th, and Thanksgiving to see them all. And what have I seen? Well, one, just the extraordinary quality of these schools. And when I leave this studio, I'm going to go to Conwell Egan and go see that. And then tomorrow I get to see one of our schools here in town called Hallahan, a girls' school that you know right in the inner city, not so far from here, as well as Roman Catholic, the boys' school. So it's so beautiful. You walk into the doors of these school, Marty, and you see places that are just immaculate. I mean, it's not just that they're welcoming and loving and warm environments. I mean, they shine. And they shine with the banners and the pride and the individual character and culture and charism of these schools. And what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to listen to the faculty and the parents and the students at these places and deeply understand in their own words why is it that they love their school or what do they want to share with others about their school so that then I can roll all that up and then at the system level say, okay, how can we make this available to more people and then how can we share the very best of these practices to overcome whatever operational challenges we're facing.
And looking at the school population, at least for the high school and some of these special ed schools, how many of the students are actually Catholic?
So that's a good question. Across the country, particularly in the inner city, we have seen a large decline in the total number of Catholics served in many low-income urban areas. Take any city in the country, that number can be as high as 80% non-Catholic. Mm-hmm. I have to be honest with you, school by school, I don't know yet, and that's a number I've got to get, what the total number of Catholic schools, total number of Catholics served in our schools is. But the number I do have for you is that our freshman class last year that just came in this year, 81.2% of them came from our Catholic elementary schools. So a very, very large number. Philadelphia remains an active, passionate, wonderfully Catholic archdiocese, and is the children from our eighth grades are coming into our high schools. What we need to be able to do is say to the local public schools and to the local public charter schools that want the Catholic option at the high school level, okay, you've been at a charter school grades 6 through 8, say, you've gone to KIPP and you've had the extraordinary experience of now getting back on track. Well, don't you want to come to a school like ours where you can now have the arts and sports and the full high school experience?
You are the co-author of a new report that came out in October. An interesting one. It has a kind of strange title: Data Backpacks, Portable Records, and Learner Profiles. Doesn't sound very sexy, if I can say those words. But it's an interesting idea of having information about students essentially follow them through their schooling career.
That's exactly right. I'll take credit for the first two words of the
data
title.
Backpacks.
Data Backpacks. Like No Excuses and On Purpose. I like two-word titles.
Gotcha.
Short and pithy. The second part of it, yeah, gets a little policy-ish. We should find a nice way, a simple way, to get your listeners to get that document. It is a good read. A real ace team, if I can say so, of Tom Vander Ark, former executive director of the Gates Foundation, John Bailey, former director of technology here in the state of Pennsylvania, then undersecretary of education, and now head of the Foundation for Educational Excellence, and Carrie Schneider. And I wrote this piece called Data Backpacks that you're talking about. And the idea there, Marty, is in the same way that in the medical world and the whole science of medical informatics, where every single device that you're hooked up to when you're in a hospital is throwing off reams and reams of information, what you want to be able to do is capture, report, and then act on that information in a whole new way. And in schooling, in the education of the young, the opportunity is what we call the highly personalized education of the child. If I know what a child knows, and if I know what a child needs to know next, then I can not just differentiate my teaching in the classroom, but the real opportunity is that everywhere I go, whether I'm on the field playing sports, whether I'm in some church group singing, whether I'm back playing a musical instrument with my private tutor, or if I'm on my Xbox playing a game, you're learning about me, and you're learning about what motivates me, what inspires me, and how I learn, not just what I know. And then if we can capture all that in some very cool cloud-based way through all of lots of devices that don't exist today but that are coming soon, then we're going to have so much more information so that in real time, you as my teacher will be able to teach me differently than you do today. So instead of spending all the time with paper and correcting tests, what we do is we can spend our time truly learning in the school. And this is what I'm more excited about than anything, because we're going to bring this to our Catholic schools in Philadelphia.
And is that different from a, you know, to use an old-fashioned word, a report card where you see how a student is performing on a particular subject? Perhaps there are even places to describe the kind of student that they are.
So a data backpack done right, and the whole point of the paper is how do we get it right and what do we have to do across industry in order to invest and build this thing, because it's not easy. In the first instance, yes, it will be a report card. And the whole idea of learner profile, the part of the title that you find cumbersome,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Rightly so.
And a little scary, maybe.
and let's talk about that, because a little scary, yeah. Do we really want all of this information aggregated in some way, and how do we provide for the safe and secure transfer of it, and who's allowed
and
to have access
correct?
To it, and is it correct? So all good questions.
Right.
No question about that. But so it is a report card, but here's the scary thing. Children in public schools today, when they are identified or classified as having special education needs, have an IEP, or an individual educational profile program. The IEP, typically in large urban areas in the United States of America, arrives at school oftentimes after a child has left that school. And it's never even there to guide and instruct and inform that child's learning. I mean, truly terrifying in low-income inner-city areas where you've got highly mobile populations and where the level of transfer of paperwork is so poorly done. Getting a report card is one thing, but we want the information. Does this child have speech or hearing or other sorts of, you know, literacy or numeracy needs? That if you were my teacher and if you knew about them before I arrived in the classroom, how much better would my experience be?
And it arrives late because of bureaucracy, or we're talking about pieces of paper that get lost in the shuffle?
So yes, yes, and yes. So bureaucracy does not help. A paper-based system does not help. Bad or, 19th century assessment systems don't help. And so, the intractable situation that families are in today, where they're having to, whether we like it or not, we are residentially segregated in the United States of America. we no longer have the burden or the bane of other forms of segregation, but we live with people like us, and rich people live with rich people, and poor people live with poor people. And unfortunately, because of the way that we fund schools largely in the United States of America, if you live in a poor area, you often live in a poorly funded area, and you live in a poor performing school area. And those people then leave their apartments week after week or month after month, and then they often take their children to a different school, and that does not help.
And that's Casey Carter. He's the new chief executive of the Faith in the Future Foundation. And again, the Archdiocese of Philadelphia is testing out a business model here in the region, turning over the management of its 17 high schools and 4 special ed schools to the foundation. And Casey Carter has written several books about education, was the president of the National Heritage Academies, running charter schools in a number of states, although not in Pennsylvania. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me ask you about, it's called the Cristo Rey Network, and these are private high schools for low-income students. There's one now in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Is that under the foundation's?
It is not.
It is not. But I know it's something that you, what, are in support of?
So I am a great friend and a great fan of the Cristo Rey Network. And in fact, it was my dear friend Rob Birdsell that just announced stepping down as the president of Cristo Rey. It was he who encouraged Faith in the Future to hire me to be its chief executive. So I have been a supporter of Cristo Rey for 5 years or more now, as long as Rob's been the president. Cristo Rey is an extraordinary model because the idea is that we can defray the cost to educate a child in the independent private school of Cristo Rey by having them go to work and have a job in corporate America one day a week. It's an innovative model. It's not ours. It's not, but we have our own school, our girls' school, Little Flower, is very close to the Cristo Rey school. And for families that are looking at Cristo Rey, they should look just as hard at Little Flower.
But and not to spend too much time on it, but it's an interesting model, 4 days of academics, one day of on the job, not just training, but actual work. And then they're paid, that money then goes back to support the school.
Yes. And you can find a piece of mine written maybe a month ago or so on National Review at National Review Online talking about Cristo Rey, because I think it's so instructive, because there you kill so many birds with one stone. By sending the children into corporate America, you give them the expectations of corporate America so that while they're in school, they understand what kind of work really connects or matters in the workplace. You get the incredible experience of having that authentic relationship with an adult who's looking after you, where perhaps you might come from a home where there are too few adults in your life who are positive role models, and on. But it really is the funding of Cristo Rey through the work-study program that truly makes it an innovation that I think a lot of schools can learn from. And just to connect this with our conversation a second ago about data backpacks, remember the school calendar, Marty, is an agrarian calendar. We still go to school from September till June, roughly, and then we get the summer off. Why? Because we used to send our children into the fields. Well, now we complain about children losing so much of their learning across the summer, and then we complain further that children aren't prepared for the workplace. Well, I see a day coming very, very soon when maybe many, many more children are actually working while they're in school. And there's no reason why in a digital age, when digital products can be produced by students, I see a time very soon here where intellectual property rights and so on could be managed through children who are working in the garage. Steve Jobs wanted to see this. He wanted to see students in school excelling in ages 14 through 18, so that they could meaningfully create things that perhaps could be sold and subsidize the cost of their own education. It might sound way out there, but it is not.
And I mean, there's also a question about, would the children get paid, or does the money go to the school?
In the case of Cristo Rey, one of the things that's brilliant about the model is that the children do the work, but they are interns in the corporations, and the corporations then the money goes to the school for that work. Similarly, I think in the kinds of systems that I'm thinking about, whereas there was piecework that was done, or nano work, or micro work. Children have a small piece of code that they could work on for just 15 minutes or 25 minutes that was sent to them in real time by a software firm. This is being done today, so this is not way out there science fiction stuff that I'm talking about. That money would go directly to the school, and it would be the school's job to, if they thought it was appropriate and if it was coordinated with the curriculum, that's why the right answer is for the money then to go to the school, rather than children getting direct pay.
Well, let's get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We have Carol from, looks like Lafayette, joining us on Radio Times. Carol, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just have a comment about the individualized educational program.
The IEP, yes, go ahead.
And that is that parents do get a copy of the IEP. That's law. I don't know if it's Pennsylvania law or federal law. So I don't know, even if the schools are slow at getting paperwork, why can't the parent just give a copy of the IEP to the new school when the child arrives?
It's a good practical question.
No, excellent question, Carol, and thanks for the opportunity to address that. You're right. Often the case, though, parents don't have access to the IEP, and in the case that I was describing in a more mobile environment, often any form of paperwork, whether it be the IEP or whether it be the the local utility bill, is not well maintained in that home. You're right. Parents, more active parents, must give their IEP to the school so that they can better serve that child. But often there really is something that you want to consider, which is many parents don't want to share the fact that their child has an individual educationalized program, and they think it's a stigma of some kind. And unfortunately, what we need to do is educate people that it is when we know what your child's needs are that we can serve you better.
Carol, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You mentioned the words active parents or active and involved parents, and I think all research tells us that if you have active involved parents, chances are you've got a child who can do pretty well in school. What can a Catholic school, or even from your philosophy, what do you do about parents who, for whatever reason, are not intimately or in any way engaged with their child's education?
Yes. Whether we whether we like it or not, it is the case. It's a true fact, and it's a good fact that the parents are always and everywhere the first educator of the child. And it's whether those lessons that are learned at home are always and everywhere good is the question behind your question. In No Excuses, which I wrote between 1998 and 2000, which is a case study of 21 high-performing, high-poverty schools, I talked about parental accountability rather than parental involvement. My concern was that 10 or 12 years later, like we are today, that somebody like yourself would say what you just said, which is all the research shows that parent involvement and involved parents drives positive outcomes for kids, and that's true. The suggestion then is when there are not involved parents, we have this baked-in failure that we have to suffer, that if we have broken homes, well, then therefore we're not going to have well-educated children. And what No Excuses said is there is absolutely no excuse for the failure of schools to teach poor children. And what we want to do, and what we've seen in the years since No Excuses, is we've seen schools take that mission on, as hard as it is, and to say that parents don't leave their good children at home. They give us the very best they have. And it's the children that walk in through the door are the ones that it's our educational mission to educate. And what the Catholic schools have shown for just centuries now is that no matter what child walks through the door, we see that child with the eyes of Christ, and we serve that child as well as we can, and then we extend that educational mission into the home.
And I want to pick up on that after this very short break, talking with Casey Carter, the CEO of the Faith in the Future Foundation, overseeing 17 Philadelphia area Catholic high schools and 4 special education schools, author of a number of books, including No Excuses. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Princeton Academy of the Sacred Heart announces an open house Sunday, November 11th at 1 p.m. Princeton Academy takes advantage of the growing body of research on the differences between the ways in which boys and girls develop. A junior kindergarten through 8th grade independent school for boys, the Academy embraces the nature of boys and nurtures their development. The school's curriculum is designed to engage boys and inspire them to explore, discover, and learn. 609-924-8143 or princetonacademy.org.
What kind of person would want to run for public office these days? Is it about them or their service to others? While there are many rewards that come with serving others, there are plenty of stressors like public scrutiny, criticism, less time for family, and less privacy. On the next Voices in the Family with Dan Gottlieb, who's attracted to public service? And what's at stake for them on a personal level? Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
A century ago, Leopold Stokowski stepped on the podium. Now the Philadelphia Orchestra celebrates the Stokowski legacy. Emmanuel Cravine conducts Stokowski's arrangement of Bach's Toccata and Fugue, plus Franck's Symphony in D minor. Tickets at philorg.org or at 215-893-1999. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, the Stokowski legacy with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We are talking about education and Catholic high schools and special education schools that are here in the Philadelphia area. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Picking up on this No Excuses, which was one of the two-word titles of one of your books, if a child, as an example, comes from a home where there is violence, or they hear gunfights and shooting outside, and sadly there are certain neighborhoods in Philadelphia where that's a pretty common occurrence, where it's actually dangerous to go outside their house, do these children have an excuse if they are struggling in school, can't pay attention, don't get their homework done, maybe are disruptive?
I like the way you ask the question. The child has an excuse. I mean, the child's been born into this intractable situation, as you describe it, which is just a reality now, not for thousands, but for millions of children in our country. The point of the title, No Excuses, is that no school has an excuse to fail to teach that child, however that child comes in. And that is just a very demanding, very difficult thing that I've just said, and yes. I understand that. And the point then isn't to then blame those who have a difficult time educating children who come from difficult circumstances. The point then is to use our innovation and our ingenuity and our passion and our devotion to the young to overcome those situations.
So the idea of getting the right kind of teachers, the getting the right kind of principal, creating the right kind of environment in a school so that a child under those circumstances can learn and perhaps thrive.
And yes to that. And what you've just described, Marty, is a environment or a school culture that is led by a leader, who's led, more importantly, not just by a school principal, but by teaching teams, by a whole faculty of people who are committed to that child and that have a shared vision of what it means to educate that whole child and then work together to overcome whatever those issues are.
One open line at 1-888-477-9499. It looks like Cindy from Fox Chase to join us. And Cindy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thanks,
sure.
Marty, for your show.
Sure.
It's always been very informative.
Thank you.
Does the money earned by the work-study students, does that go back directly to the school, or does it actually pay for that student's tuition to be at the school?
Cindy, thanks for the question. You're talking about the Cristo Rey Network, and when a child has the work-study program, the money goes back to the school to subsidize the cost of that child's education, if that answers your question. Between 40 and up to 70% of the total cost to educate that child is paid for by the revenue that comes in from the corporate sponsors that benefit from the students on the job.
Cindy, thanks for the call to Radio Times to see what Ross from South Philadelphia has to say. And Ross, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
It's my opinion that any time you take public dollars away from public education to send them to private institutions, that it diminishes and helps to defeat the quality of public education. And personally, I'm vehemently sending any tax dollars to a religious institution, no matter what their teachings, because I don't want to support those religious institutions with my tax dollars. I'll take my comment off the air.
Ross, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Casey Carter, go ahead.
Ross, I appreciate it. Thanks for being so direct and clear. It's nothing quite like a clear comment to be able to have a good debate in a free society like our own. Public dollars going to private institutions, ostensibly to subsidize then religious organizations. Let's get to the whole point behind the many points that you're making there. Totally understand your opinion. I disagree with it. Just on many levels. The Catholic Church, but many other religious organizations besides, have subsidized for decades the cost to educate the public in the inner city. Any single time that a family goes to a Catholic school in the inner city at their own private cost, they are taking away from the state the obligation to provide that free and appropriate public education. And the public education system should be run efficiently enough to be able to benefit from that expense reduction, and they're not. The total cost to educate the young, Ross, in our country has doubled and doubled again in the last 50 years, okay, in inflation-adjusted dollars. We are now spending more than $500 billion a year educating children 5 through 18 in the United States of America, and our scores are flat or declining. Globally, Ross, we are not competing with other countries around the world. And what you want to consider, what I would have you think about, is look at other countries. In the United Kingdom, for example, the Church of England is one of the largest educators of the public using public dollars because they have a national curriculum. Now that we've got the Common Core in the United States, if there are institutions, if there are private institutions, whether they have a religious orientation or not, that are able to educate children better, and let's decide how we measure better, educate children better or the same as the local public competition, we could consider using those public dollars to subsidize that private education.
Thanks for the call, Russ. But just picking up on what you just said, and this is an obvious point, but obviously we're not the UK. I mean, we have a different constitution, and I don't need to tell anybody that. But it seems to me that the public education, for better or for worse, which is tax supported, but you know, students get to go for free, that's a public benefit, and we hope that schools can do better and educate students as well. I would also say, having gone to school 50 years ago, education is so different now. It's so much more complicated. We have so many more different kinds of students. We're asking children to finish school in many ways. They were allowed to drop out and could get a pretty good job,
right,
50 years ago. It seems to me it's a very different challenge today to educate kids.
It's a very different challenge, and like so many things in our society, I think it just it suggests that we should bring as many forces to bear as possible in bringing a solution to those challenges. And what you have with Faith in the Future, what you have with the Catholic high schools in the inner city of Philadelphia, is you already have a high-performing system that is working well, providing an extraordinarily high-quality education at a very low cost to its students. In fact, it costs us less than the local system to educate, but because we don't have the flow of those dollars except for the Opportunity Scholarship tax credit, we are then requiring that, in addition to the taxpayer who's paying for a student that they're not sending to that local public school, we ask them to pay us tuition as well. And we at the foundation have to get very good at bringing that money to those families. That's a major part of my job, is to make sure that anybody in the city of Philadelphia, anybody in the five-county Philadelphia region who wants a Catholic high school education, we're going to make it affordable for you.
The Archbishop Chaput has been a very outspoken supporter of vouchers, saying it's a matter of parental rights and basic justice. Again, I guess going back to the dollars and cents, if vouchers, something like $8,500 for a student and in a poor underperforming school, that would essentially pay for a Catholic education, wouldn't it, for a year?
And it would. And what we really need to be able to do is to ask ourselves, why do we live in a country where we have just pilloried and demonized the voucher word? And why is it the case? A charter school is a voucher to an institution rather than a voucher to a parent. And in the United States of America, you're right, with our very separate constitution,
yes,
and our belief in an educated polity, Thomas Jefferson was right. We cannot be free if we are not educated, and we need to provide for the education of the young better than we are today. And if there are institutions today that are already providing that service, well, then let's take the burden off of those organizations and those institutions that are having a difficult time educating the children, and let's have those dollars then flow where they could to provide for the education of the young.
Let me see what Anna from Regalsville has to say. And Anna, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Hi. I'm very concerned about the idea of this data backpack. I think it violates a lot of the basic tenets of an American education, which is that we remake ourselves and we grow. And a kid that's saddled with a pile of test scores, some of which may erroneously describe his learning or describe past failures, is not a kid that's going to feel good about themselves. I saw this with failed learners all the time when I worked in adult literacy.
Anna, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead.
Anna, I appreciate the comment, and you're absolutely right. Let me sort of step it up one degree higher. If you're concerned about that, there are all kinds of concerns, aren't there, with the centralization of data of any kind. And let's not distract from our topic today, which is really what faith in the future can do for Catholic high schools here in Philadelphia. But to your point, I would say that one reason why nobody on the right side of the aisle would go for a thing like the data backpack is that typically conservatives aren't interested in the concentration or the centralization of information in a way that the government or a police state could go awry with it. Nobody on the left side of the aisle or a more liberal would go with it, because the second that you really did have good, transparent transfer of data, when the data followed the child, it wouldn't be too much of an argument to then say the money should follow the child. And this whole conversation that we're having about vouchers would then become real. To your concerns, they're real. But with the implementation of any technology solution, we're going to find out how that information flows. You can get your free credit report today, and all of your financial information is transferred across state lines securely. Yes, you have to work very hard, don't you, to get derogatory remarks taken off of your credit report. I understand the fears you're raising. They are genuine. The implementation of it is a big thing. That's why the whole idea of the data backpack is still out there and will require a great deal of prudence to get done right.
And I appreciate the call to Radio Times to see what Daryl from Nicetown has to say. Daryl, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is kind of wide-ranging, but it's more around the impact of teaching of religion classes to the Catholic student. Well, not the Catholic student, because you said there's a large percentage possibly of students who are non-Catholic, but I'm more interested in. I was definitely a Catholic student, but we were accustomed to and used to priests and nuns who taught our religion classes. What are you saying to people who will be looking at the Catholic school as an option when there's not many priests and nuns around in terms of how Catholic religion is being incorporated in the total education of these students?
Daryl, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead,
Daryl. A good question. The line among Catholic educators for a long time who have been teaching non-Catholics is we do this not because they're Catholic, but because we are. And I believe, this is one man's opinion, but this is the vision also of the Faith in the Future Foundation, it is absolutely the vision of Archbishop Chaput here in Philadelphia, is that Catholic schools will be great and will remain great to the degree that they remain Catholic. And while it is true that vocations are down and there are fewer religious men and women of the clergy in the schools themselves remain committed to their Catholic culture, committed to the sacramental life, and committed to the teachings of the Catholic Church. The idea there is that any faith benefits from the articulate and the faith-filled expression of a faith. And so Catholics actually serve people of other religions better when they are well-spoken Catholics. In the same way, well-spoken Muslims and well-spoken Jews get our conversation about religion right. And that's what we want to do, is we want to show people that let us provide you a world-class education in a faith-filled environment that lets you understand our faith tradition and the way that we understand the love of God and the life of the mind and the love of learning. And then let's allow you to choose for yourself whether that's for you.
Well, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I think there's something like 700 lay teachers working, but perhaps this includes elementary schools as well. But our last caller raised an interesting question about, you know, who is teaching, and it seems like there are more lay teachers within the system than there used to be.
So there are many, many more lay teachers in the system than there used to be. I think the number, if I have this right, has gone from 4,000 religious down to 400 religious, and I would have to, you know, get back to you to find out across what portion of the educational spectrum does that number come from. But decline in 10 times is a big one, and that also changes the business model fundamentally. Even though religious themselves get compensated for the work they do, they get paid. They're not free. It is their commitment to the mission that has been an extraordinary gift to school systems all across the country, not just here in Philadelphia. The commitment and the charism and the passion of religious educators over the years have provided an enormous good at a relatively low cost. And because there are fewer of them, it is more expensive today, period, to run a Catholic school. And what we need to get very good at is creating an environment where we can absorb those costs, and having fewer teachers who come at lower cost and being able to provide a high quality of education requires a high quality educator whom we have to compensate well.
And we're almost out of time here. How will we know if the foundation has been successful? What are your benchmarks?
So the benchmarks, thank you for the question. I really appreciate it. In the first instance, the schools that we have today need to grow. They need to grow in total number of children served. So the 14,210 children that we have today, we're going to help the Philadelphia School Partnership meet its goal of providing 35,000 high-quality seats here in the city. So the first goal that you're going to see are many more children in the city, but across the five-county area are going to be in Catholic schools, and they're going to be there because their family can afford them.
On that note, Samuel Casey Carter. Casey Carter, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. He's the CEO of the Faith in the Future Foundation, the new CEO and a relatively new foundation, overseeing 17 Philadelphia area Catholic high schools and 4 special education schools, author of a number of books, including about a decade ago, a book called No Excuses, Lessons from 21 High-Performing, High-Poverty Schools. Go to whyy.org/radio times to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for those phone calls as well. We'll be right back.